Chapter 5. I stared at the Ibex woman with my jaw almost in my lap as I went over in my head what she had just told me. And no matter which way I sliced it, her words were not making any sort of sense. "I'm sorry, but did you just tell me I should have poisoned Amaya just by being with her?" I blurted out when nothing was adding up. "Either I am going deaf and senile, or I'm missing a much, much larger part of the puzzle." Anwar studied me for a moment in silence, and I couldn't help but feel a little uneasy as her eyes pinned mine.
"Do you know what it costs an acolyte of any status to take the oath?"
"No, but I'm guessing if I did, I would be less thrown off right now," I deadpanned.
"The particulars of the oath are pretty straightforward,"
she started.
"Simply, every acolyte must drink of the ocean Mercedes, so her knowledge will flow through us forevermore. Too much of it, while an acolyte is newly pledged, can overwhelm her, and so Argus especially must remain chaste of any man's essence who has also consumed the ocean. And they teach us all travelers always drink from the ocean of knowledge."
"Yeah, that was one of the first things I did when I got here," I admitted. "The sun was so hot, and when I dove into the fresh water, I was so thirsty I didn't even think twice."
"Yes, this is how it is for everyone who travels here,"
Anwar agreed, as she massaged her right hand with her left.
"The goddess makes it so."
"You said the ocean contains knowledge?" I questioned.
"Indeed."
The Ibex woman nodded her long-horned head.
"Haven't you ever wondered how it is that you could understand everyone from the moment you got here? The knowledge of language comes from the ocean. All travelers have experienced this."
"But too much of the ocean's knowledge is like poison?" I asked, as I attempted to understand what she was telling me.
"Because the Augur women are already given powerful gifts of knowledge at birth from Mercedes, they risk becoming inundated with too much knowledge if they make love with those who also have it as well. Too much can burn their minds out and could put them in eternal sleep."
I knew it was against her customs to forgo remaining chaste, but she never told me there were actual dangers to herself, I said, as I pinched the bridge of my nose. "You have to believe me, Anna. If I had known how risky it was for her, I would never have agreed to it."
"I do believe you, Alex,"
she placated, and the corners of her mouth ticked up in a little amusement.
"I also believe, once again, nothing can stand between my sister and her goal when she gets it into her stubborn head. She probably figured it was a risk worth taking. However, I don't know how she could have come to that conclusion, because by all rights, this should not have worked."
"So the question now is why?" I pointed out. "Is it because she's the prophetess?"
"No,"
she said.
"If anything, that makes her more susceptible. The only thing that would make sense is if..."
Anwar trailed off as the thoughts visibly raced through her mind. Something had obviously occurred to her, and I waited with bated breath to find out what it was. I knew by the way she suddenly sucked in a sharp breath and gripped my wrist that she was onto something profound. "What is it, Anna?" I asked, when the anticipation was too much for me to handle. She also struck me as the type of person who could easily get trapped in her own thoughts from time to time. And I didn't want her to leave me out. "You're killing me here."
"There are only three possible ways things could have ended up the way that they did,"
she began, as her eyes shifted rapidly back and forth like she was organizing some massive spreadsheet in her head.
"The first would be you didn't drink of the ocean. But by your accounts, you are telling me you did, correct?"
"Correct, so that's out," I confirmed. "And the other two?"
"The second reason could be that everything the Order ever taught us was wrong. Which is hard to believe, because there are accounts of people actually going insane from ocean poisoning,"
she listed.
"And then the third would be, maybe Amaya isn't of prophetess lineage at all. Either that, or these two reasons need more investigation. But if the latter is true, and Amaya is not of prophetess origin, then there's no obligation holding her to the Order or the oath."
"This sounds like the loophole we need," I said, and tried not to get too excited. How do we go about proving any of this?"
"Well, ideally, it would be a matter of comparing specific genealogies, but all of the archives that held the ones we may need were buried on Eng due to the uprisings.
Anwar explained. Buried like physically buried? I asked.
Yes. After the Eng folk were punished for their part in the war, the ashes of blood in the Temple Order physically buried most of the ancient archives under the ground.
She said, and it almost felt like I was back in history class. I didn't know Jenner's people were punished, I frowned. What exactly were they punished for?
They were punished due to the fact they put their intelligence above even the greater good,
the Ibex woman said, as if she was reciting something from a textbook.
The Eng folk believe in free knowledge for all, but the simple fact is there are just some things the larger part of society should not be made aware of if peace is to be achieved.
That sounds ominous, I said dryly. And what does it mean exactly?
I don't really know,
she shrugged.
This is all they teach us.
And you don't think that's a problem? I asked. But when she continued to blink at me with a blank expression, I decided to move on. Anyway, what was the punishment?
The Isle of Eng was enchanted by the High Priestess many seasons ago,
Anwar continued.
She cursed the land and made it so the Eng folk who live there lose their higher reasoning and regress, or devolve, into their base species. That is why most of Jenna's folk have chosen exile from their homeland rather than succumb to savagery.
Jenner's never mentioned anything like that, I said, and hunched my shoulders a little. He's mentioned the uprisings in passing and about how he misses being an archivist, but I guess I just never thought to ask beyond that.
Not many of the Angish like to discuss the past,
the Ibex woman said.
Although it might be necessary to do so now. There is a chance we could potentially unearth the archive we need that holds the knowledge of gaining Amaya's freedom. I am willing to do whatever it takes, because I know she is willing to do what she must so I may have the same. A life that is my own.
Ani? Ani! A worried voice called out before the owner of that voice came out onto the balcony we were sitting on.
I'm here, my love,
Anwar said, and then hopped off the ledge. Where have you been, my darling? I've been worried, Horace said, as he reached for her and brought her closer. And what is this? Were you liaising with my best friend? Have you sought affections elsewhere? Oh, the tragedy! It's true. She finally traded up, I laughed as I shook my head as I patted him on the shoulder. You can come to our wedding if you want. Oh, gee, how kind of you, thanks, he snarked back and then shoved me away. As if I would believe for a second she would fall for you instead of me. I mean, look at this face, this hair.
You are quite attractive,
she agreed as she gazed at Horace's face.
If I were to leave and elope with another, it would only be due to your big mouth.
Exactly what I was... Hey, wait a minute, he interrupted himself when Anwar's words finally hit their target. I am a good listener, I said, and waggled my eyebrows at Anwar just to get under my friend's skin. That's it, I'm never letting either one of you out of my sight again, he declared, as he threw his love over one shoulder and marched a few steps away. The whole time, Anwar just went along with it, with a bored look on her face, as if these antics were nothing new and wholly on par for the course. The way her cool expression contrasted with the Falcon Man's overblown dramatics made the whole scene even more hysterical, and I couldn't contain myself from finally letting loose a side-busting guffaw. When I started laughing, this caused Horace to drop the act as well, and he put his love back down on solid ground so he could laugh without the fear of dropping her. Anwar simply smirked as her opal eyes tracked the both of us with silent judgment.
I take everything back. I'm going to just elope with myself.
Horace and I paused our hysterics long enough to take a breath, but when we locked eyes, we devolved into giggles once more.
But on a more serious note, the Falcon Man said, as the hilarity subsided. Are you really all right, Ani?
I am,
she reassured him.
Alex and I were discussing ways Amaya and I can both leave the Order for good.
Oh?
He arched one of his thin black eyebrows. What is the consensus? In summary, I need to pick the brain of our resident archivist. But if you want my opinion, I don't think we'll be returning home anytime soon, I said. Where do you think we'll be going? He asked. Eng Isle, I said.
Well, it seems like I have a lot to catch up on, Horace said. I'll let Ani do the honors. Okay, good. Because there's someone I need to have a chat with, I said, and I frowned a little when my thoughts clouded with Amaya.
Be sure to give her an earful from me as well,
Anwar said knowingly.
And don't go easy on her.
I won't, I said.
And Alex?
She stopped me before I could duck through the entrance of the balcony.
Thank you for listening.
Of course. I gave her a smile and nodded at Horace when he mouthed a quick thank you at me as well. And then I left them alone to talk while I sought out Amaya. My search eventually led me out to the courtyard where the rest of the Terrans were finally making the journey from lower to upper echelon in two long lines. The gap between the edge of the airship and the other side was still quite sizable, so two wooden ramps were set up parallel to one another and were being manned by several sturdy men on each of the ramp's four corners. Because the ramps were being held only by some rope and a few men, the going had to be slow and single file. But the sight of Zoe's ears as well as Rylan's familiar laughter caught my attention and temporarily distracted me from my task. I stopped, and I felt a fond smile unfurl on my lips when I saw my son twirl my wife around in a little improvised jig as some of the kids sang a song and clapped their hands. It seemed to be the perfect distraction for the little fussy ones who were getting whiny from all the standing around as the lines moved slowly. I decided to linger back in the crowd just a little so I could watch without being noticed for a moment. Rylan seemed to have grown an entire acre since I'd seen him last. And even though he still had that boyish grin and his movements were still gawky, I could start to see the young man hiding beneath the adolescent. His jaw was a little bit more square and his voice, which had previously cracked on every other word, now seemed to be finding a mellow timbre to settle on. Pretty soon a full-fledged man would take the place of the boy, a man with features alien to mine. Because the reality was Rylan was only my adopted son, and whenever I thought about his origins, it was a sharp reminder that I'd had the misfortune of running into his biological bastard of a father, Kavo Alda. Well, running into him wasn't entirely accurate, given I'd never actually met the guy face to face, which was more of a gut punch whenever I looked at Rylan. The elusive traveler-slash-dreamwalker menace, and also the proverbial thorn in my side, definitely had his fingers in a lot of different pies, and his trail of destruction was something I'd inadvertently committed myself to fixing along the way. When I first heard of the guy back on Nada Isle, it was after I got down to the bottom of the corruption in Gatetown. Through a long string of puppets and pawns, starting back from even when I'd met Dagmar, the person behind the curtain had always been Alda. Finding out his influence exerted all the way to Tear was just the icing on the cake. Recently, his top crime featured the Terrans, among other things like helping Arcus Dohler experiment with demon ash in order to create minions, as well as a whole host of things he did that took place before I'd even arrived here. Namely, orphaning Rylan for starters. And come to find out, he wasn't the only one up to these antics, if Maz, Tharfin's niece, was anything to go by. The lizard girl with similar Dark Realm gifts like Rylan was also orphaned by her father, Krev Alda, Kavo's brother. Luckily, one half of that equation had been dealt with. But the fact remained they had both been here as travelers longer than I had. This meant that they had the opportunities to spread their network in any way they seemingly saw fit. And unfortunately, what they saw fit tended to wreak havoc and pain wherever they left a footprint. I was quickly coming to grasp that my main ambition would be to end the collective reign of the Alda's treachery once and for all. I just needed to freaking get to the last brother first. So far, all I'd managed to do was take out Kavo's generals, so to speak. And I was beginning to feel like I was in some never-ending video game, where I had to battle boss after boss without actually meeting the final head honcho. If he was indeed the headest of all honchos. Who knew how deep the rabbit hole went?
Dance with us, shepherd!
A little lizard girl with clear blue eyes and adorable purple dreadlocks done up into pigtails tugged my hand. Shepherd? I allowed the little girl to pull me into a circle until I was forced to play along and dance with her alongside Zoe and Rylan.
It definitely helped to pass the time, that was for sure. And I forgot a little bit about my irate mood as I eventually came together with my cat wife and spun her around.
Why, hello, Shepherd,
Zoe said as she looped her arms loosely around my neck.
What have you been up to?
I learned some very interesting information about our Amaya, I said as we swayed in a circle. Also, why are people calling me Shepherd?
Is the name the Terrans have given you because you helped lead them out of the lower echelon?
She explained as she twirled the hair at the nape of my neck around one of her fingers.
And what is wrong with our Amaya?
Aside from the fact that the Order wants her to hurry up and take her oath, I asked as I released a gusty sigh. Oh, just the fact that she kept some pretty important information from me and put herself at risk.
That doesn't sound much like her,
Zoe said, as we came to a stop along with the rest of the dancers.
What did she do?
She assured me coupling with her wouldn't bring about any consequences, and nothing happened. But according to Anwar, Amaya could have ended up dead, or at the very least, really sick. I pinched the bridge of my nose as I once again went over how lucky we both were that nothing adverse came out of our lovemaking. I just don't know why she would do something like that.
I can't begin to guess at her reasons,
my cat wife said as she kneaded both of my shoulders.
But you are quite tense over the matter, husband. Might I suggest you work off a little energy before you speak with her? I can tell by the fire behind your eyes that you might say something in haste that you would regret in the future.
I glanced at the knowing woman beside me, who never failed to catch me off guard with little things like this. She was there to constantly remind me, even though I was the head of this family, I was not alone or without support from her especially. Maybe it was just the natural hierarchy that developed. But Zoe had taken on the role of first wife with a seriousness that belied her stalwart loyalty and endless patience. She really was my right hand, and the partner I turned to for advice and strategy. So it was natural to let go of some of my worries and let her take over. What do you recommend, wife? I asked as I smoothed my hands along the curve of her waist.
It's been a while since you sparred with me, husband,
she purred.
The Terrans are partial to staff-like weapons, and I thought it might be useful to train with them. If you are unarmed, you at least will be able to use any sort of long melee object with efficiency.
You're sexy when you get all technical, I remarked, as I felt my good humor returning.
We should do this outside in the forest, so you may practice with found weapons you might come across, just in case you ever find yourself in a similar scenario,
she said in a distracted but all-business tone of voice. I chuckled and shook my head. What do you think? Should we bring the kid, too?
Yes, he will need to learn this as well,
she said.
Hey, Rai!
I yelled across the courtyard to him, and he halted in the middle of his dancing.
Come on, Mom wants to teach us how to hit each other with sticks.
Okay,
he said with a bright smile, and bounded over like a Labrador retriever.
Please,
Zoe said as she clicked her teeth disapprovingly.
There's a bit more nuance to it than just hitting each other with sticks.
Yes, Mom,
Rylan and I both chorused. And then the three of us let the Terrans get on with their exodus while we jogged through the airship back toward the Sentinel Tower.
Here is as good of a place as any,
Zoe said as she slowed to a stop in the clearing where the squallers used to be tied.
Each of you find a staff you can wield.
Like this?
Rylan asked as he held a large branch that towered at least 3 feet above his head after he stabbed it in the ground.
A little shorter than that,
Zoe giggled as she broke off her own makeshift quarterstaff. Here, let me help you with that, bud, I said, and took the overly large branch from him. Then I broke the top quarter of the branch off, so now it came up to his chin. After I'd fixed him up with a suitable weapon, I got my own from a fallen tree right next to me. And with a little more elbow grease, I was able to break it down to size.
A real weapon of this type would be hewn of the strongest wood and balanced correctly. But if you find yourself without a weapon, anything will do,
she said, and then demonstrated how capable she was at kicking ass by twirling her branch around like some gorgeous Electra from Daredevil.
Oh, that's so awesome,
Rylan said, as we both watched the Catwoman twirl and flip. And she demonstrated her wicked moves.
She's going to teach us all that, right?
Well, let's start with the basics first.
Zoe chuckled when she came to a rest.
First, you both need instruction on how to hold your quarterstaffs.
Like the no-nonsense trainer she was, she then went behind each of us and adjusted both our stances and our grips, so we were holding our staffs with two hands and pointed away from our bodies as if we were holding a sword. The only difference was how wide apart I had to place my hands in order to control the staff, and currently, it felt foreign from wielding my blades. Hopefully it wouldn't be too much of a learning curve.
It feels a little awkward,
Rylan admitted as he tried to find a position that was more comfortable.
It will feel unnatural until you start practicing with a properly balanced staff,
Zoe explained, and then tapped her staff against his so he would straighten up and pay attention.
It is more difficult to fight with a found weapon just like this, so if you practice the hard way first, then the easy way will be even easier.
Makes sense, I said with a shrug, and held my staff at the ready. What's next?
Next, I will show you both slowly how to strike and how to block,
she said, and squared off in front of me.
Pay attention, if you can, to my hands and my feet. The key is to make big steps so the power you build behind the follow-through only increases with your body's motion.
Rylan and I both watched, captivated, as the seasoned warrior raised the staff across her chest, took a step back with her right foot, and then with a cry, she surged forward and struck a rock straight on the top with a mighty swack. The strike reverberated around the small clearing, shortly followed by a strange crackling sound. Then a huge fissure began growing down the center of the rock until it broke apart into two equal halves.
Holy shit!
Rylan gasped as he gaped at the two halves gently rocking to a stop where they fell.
Dude, language. But honestly, I feel the same, I said, as I stared at what used to be a small, sturdy boulder.
If you maximize the power behind your strike with your whole body and use your left hand as the pivot point, you have a weapon just as deadly as a blade.
My sexy, badass wife swung her branch around until it was resting across the top of both of her shoulders.
Who wants to try first?
It was a toss-up whose me was loudest between the two of us. What followed next was a lot of sticks banging on the tops of rocks without a whole lot to show for it, and an ache growing in my forearms.
All right, that's enough,
Zoe finally instructed.
That's not going to develop in a day. Let's move on to some actual sparring.
Thank Mercedes,
Rylan huffed, and then rested his staff against a rock so he could shake out his hands.
Although, instead of going for each other's heads, we will aim to strike each other on the shoulders,
Zoe said, and squared up in front of me again. In slow and exaggerated movements, she took a step and swung the staff down toward my right shoulder where she tapped it, and then raised the staff over her head immediately after. When she gazed at me with her intense sapphire eyes, I knew she was waiting for me to respond in kind. So I copied what I saw and proceeded to strike her like she showed me.
Like that?
I asked her as I adjusted my grip.
Make sure your thumbs are both pointed inward when you wield,
she said, and tapped my top hand. I flipped over my right hand so both of them were holding the staff correctly.
It feels funny to hold it like this,
Rylan said.
I know, it will at first,
Zoe explained as she helped the kid with his stance one more time.
But you want your full driving power behind your striking palm here. Think of it like you're pushing the staff instead of swinging it. Now, face off, you two.
Oh, man. I'm so gonna kick your butt, I teased as I bounced a little on the balls of my feet.
Not if I kick yours first,
Rylan said with a playful little snarl on his face. And then the two of us commenced trying to tap each other on the shoulder as we danced around one another. Zoe would occasionally call out suggestions or adjustments from where she was perched on a high stump.
Be sure after you strike, you raise the staff above your head,
she called out.
That is how you block any incoming attacks.
I took a step toward Rye and tapped him on the shoulder before I leapt back.
Ah, gotcha!
Aye!
He growled and attempted to swipe at me.
Push, not swing,
I parroted Zoe's earlier instruction, and then I whacked him on the other shoulder.
Gotcha again!
The kid growled again, but this time the fierce look that marred his face was mingled with frustration and determination. A sudden scream pierced the air right as Rylan upped his game and feinted a strike. But because I was distracted, the strike meant for my shoulder actually connected with my temple. There was a bright flash of light before everything went abruptly black.